Welcome to NLA's weekly call. Today is Monday, March 7, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, go to National Liberty Alliance and click on Network. And hang on, I lost my place. To ask and click on Weekly Call for instruction to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, send to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. See the banners at the right side of our website, of which the proceeds support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more and click on our donation tab on the top right. And tonight's scripture reading is the Gospel according to John, chapter 1. I think we're hard heading back into it. I'll go ahead and do that now. Just bear with me. I can find the list here. Okay.
Chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning.
Sounds like it's across the room, Gerard. Did you click include the audio?
What's that?
It sounds like it's across the room. Did you include include the audio?
I don't know. Let's see. I don't know. Where is that? How come I don't see it? Is it under?
You knew, actually.
I don't know why you're not hearing it.
You see it at the bottom of your screen, Gerard, your share options screen, share computer sound, and it should have a green check mark there.
I see share. I see record.
Are you in the share screen? Start sharing screen?
Hang on. Okay. No, I'm not in the screen share. Okay, so.
Yeah, you have to get in screen share.
Share computer, auto share, share computer. Okay. I hit start sharing. Nothing's happened yet.
And then just check the box for the screen that you want to share. Up above.
Hang on. No, we don't want that. Not prepared for this, I guess. Here, let me Okay. There we go.
them was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness.
Can you hear that now?
Yes.
Okay.
And the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh, and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him, and cried, saying, This was he of whom I spake, He that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. And of his fullness have all we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. And this is the record of John, when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, Who art thou? And he confessed and denied not, but confessed, I am not the Christ. And they asked him, What then? Art thou Elias? And he said, I am not. Art thou that prophet? And he answered, No. Then said they unto him, Who art thou? That we may give an answer to them that sent us. What sayest thou of thyself? He said, I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness, Make straight the way of the Lord, as said the prophet Isaiah. And they which were sent were of the Pharisees. And they asked him, and said unto him, Why baptizest thou then, if thou be not that Christ, nor Elias, neither that prophet? John answered them, saying, I baptize with water, but there standeth one among you, whom ye know not. He it is, who coming after me is preferred before me, whose shoes latchet I am not worthy to unloose. These things were done in Bethabara beyond Jordan, where John was baptizing. The next day John seeth Jesus coming unto him, and saith, Behold the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world. This is he, of whom I said, After me cometh a man which is preferred before me, for he was before me. And I knew him not, but that he should be made manifest to Israel. Therefore am I come baptizing with water. And John bare record, saying, I saw the Spirit descending from heaven like a dove, and it abode upon him. And I knew him not, but he that sent me to baptize with water, the same said unto me, Upon whom thou shalt see the Spirit descending and remaining on him, the same is he which baptizeth with the Holy Ghost. And I saw and bear record that this is the Son of God. Again the next day after, John stood, and two of his disciples, and looking upon Jesus as he walked, he saith, Behold the Lamb of God. And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. Then Jesus turned and saw them following, and saith unto them, What seek ye? They said unto him, Rabbi, which is to say, being interpreted, Master, where dwellest thou? He saith unto them, Come and see. They came and saw where he dwelt, and abode with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. One of the two which heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first findeth his own brother Simon, and saith unto him, We have found the Messias, which is, being interpreted, the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus. And when Jesus beheld him, he said, Thou art Simon, the son of Jonah. Thou shalt be called Cephas, which is by interpretation a stone. The day following, Jesus would go forth into Galilee, and findeth Philip, and saith unto him, Follow me. Now Philip was of Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip findeth Nathanael, and saith unto him, We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael said unto him, Can there any good thing come out of Nazareth? Philip saith unto him, Come and see. Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him, and saith of him, Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. Nathanael saith unto him, Whence knowest thou me? Jesus answered and said unto him, Before that Philip called thee, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. Nathanael answered and saith unto him, Rabbi, thou art the Son of God, thou art the King of Israel. Jesus answered and said unto him, Because I said unto thee, I saw thee under the fig tree, believest thou? Thou shalt see greater things than these. And he saith unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Hereafter ye shall see heaven open, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man.
Okay. And get rid of that. So, I don't have a specific subject, really. Let's see, I'm going to stop this sharing so that we can... I can look at my notes here. All right, let's see what we have here. First, I want to see how many people we got in. And if anybody wants to get in the queue, they should get in there now. We got a fairly small group here tonight, but we'll be okay. Oh, there's 30, so that's good. Any rate, sorry for not being prepared. This was on the last minute. Okay. Anyway, John had intended tonight's topic, which I don't know that I'm prepared for. EMP and lightning strike shield. I guess he was going to. We went into that a little bit. Bonds and then bonds for the win. And our conversation really should be about COS common law and pounding documents. And I'd like to hear from people who had experience in starting COSs. And I don't know, you know, we have an announcements. We got two new course, foundation course and administrators accrediting course. I can't expand upon that because that's what John did. He'll have to bring, if you're not up to date on that, you should go check it out and we will, and he will explain that. We have a reminder that the campaign for constitutional sheriffs and report problems with advancing our courses to mail@nla.org. So anybody has problems moving ahead in the course, you should report it to mail@nla.org. And there is a reminder here that I don't know if this is an old one. Seminar date December 18th. No, that's old notes. So I'm done with the notes. Terry, I don't know if you have any announcements. You know that there are. I know Jan's not here, so maybe he had them. So maybe we'll just skip that.
I don't have any announcements. I have only one question, and it's kind of complex.
Oh boy! Well,
it's up to you.
Okay, and I don't see anybody in the queue yet, so nobody has anything to say. Read that question, and I'll decide what to do with it, or not. And Brent is not here today either, right? No, I don't see him.
I don't see Brent yet.
Yeah, it looks
Brent
like
Brent is in the room.
Oh!
Oh, he is in the room? Okay.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Brent, this is directed to you. I think looks like she included acommonlawyer@gmail.com in the question.
Okay. Excuse me. Okay, I'm here.
Okay.
That's Brent Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and he does comments here on Monday nights. So, if actually, since there's a question, and Brent, I'll introduce you more, or you can introduce yourself when you get ready for your monologue. We're going to have a slow night. It's going to be quick. So, get ready. But let's see what that question is, and between Brent and I, maybe we can put some light onto it. Go ahead.
Okay, it's actually three questions, I think. The question I have is for those who sell their home. Is there a real true balance of homes that we have purchased with only one party signing said contract? And what I mean is, I have a purchaser for my home, but what I have seen on the credit reporting system is different balances. Is there anyone in San Antonio, Texas area for me to work with locally to resolve? That's the first question.
Yeah, and I lost my sound when you were halfway through it.
How about terrible. Time to call a realtor?
Yeah,
call a realtor.
Well, they're saying, is there any real balance, you know, because of the way they did the home? I don't see how that's going to affect you as far as selling a place. The main thing is that you get the cash out of it and you turn it into something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Okay. The second, but really two-parted question, what right does the government have over anyone released from their incarceration system? And then I can ask the second part whenever you're ready.
Well, that's a statute that they put in now. Do they really have that right? Most of the things they do are not a right. You know, I remember when I grew up as a kid, they used to show the sheriff would arrest the guys and take their guns and stuff, you know, and they'd be in jail. And then when they got out, he'd return their guns. So, but way back when, there was no dire consequences from that. You know, I understand today that people don't want a convicted felon to own a gun, and I could understand that if he was convicted of a violent crime or a bank robbery, that's certainly reasonable. But, our laws are basically, we're supposed to be doing the law of God, the common law, and it's common sense. So, you know, in some circumstances, it's the people, it's not the government. Do the people have the right to remove a certain inalienable right of another person? And, you know, if they're harming other people or they've proved that they have, absolutely we can do that, you know, under the law. So I don't know, you know, there's a lot of stuff they do that's unconstitutional, and that just reflects the times that we live in. Until we straighten them out and we bring them back to common law, back to the Constitution, and back to God's law, the laws of nature and nature's God, we got problems. So, and that's up to us to fix. You know, you can't. The government's never going to fix itself. If you're waiting for the government to fix itself, then you're going to be waiting. You're going to end up seeing the end of the world before that happens. So. Anyway, that's my answer to that. I don't know if it, you know, if it helps you at all, but basically, you know, common sense, you know, and rule. Forget the statutes. You rule. Each case has its own merits because there are no two cases the same. That's the other problem today. They want everything to go into a punch card, like an IBM card, and when the holes line up, that's what it is. Well, human beings. We're not AI. We don't fit into punch cards. And, of course, it's because they're lazy and they want to streamline it and they want to make money, so they have dollar amounts and all this stuff. So follow the money. They can't make money with juries deliberating stuff and meting out real justice. And that's the problem. Okay? Anything else? And, Brent, yep. If you got something else to say there, chime right in because I'm sure that you got some good stuff as far as, you know, the government and incarceration and what do they call it when they put you on probation, I guess it is, right?
Right, right. Bail, probation, incarceration, all those fancy words, but
all those money making things. But
yeah. No, that's what it is. I agree with it. And the courts do not have authority to deliver a life sentence to anybody but those that are convicted of capital crimes. And to tell somebody that they can't vote for the rest of their life, they can't possess or own a firearm, is a life sentence. The loss of reputation that comes with prosecution is overwhelming. and the loss of reputation that comes with being thrown in jail. Being accused is enough. Being thrown in jail is overwhelming. And then to add to it and say that some judge someplace, not a jury, some judge has the authority, or that's a lie, I don't believe he does, to give a man or a woman a life sentence is unconscionable. We used to hear, and this is going back, I feel old. I remember when people used to say habitually, well, he's paid his debt to society, leave him alone. It's all over. Well, it's not all over anymore. It's a life sentence. But you got to deal with it. So what right does the government have over somebody that's been in jail? Well, traditionally, you get a prison sentence, and then they let you out on probation. They don't just let you out. What's that all about? What's the big deal? Why do you have to report in every month for 2 years? What's going on here? Frankly, I just think it's an excuse to hire people and make more money. No kidding. And there's no reason for that. Either you're in jail or out. But the courts have said, by the way, the courts have said that if you go to jail for a year, 5 years, or however long it is, then you're out for a year, 2 years on what they call probation, as if you've been a really bad guy before you went in. It could have been some minor thing, didn't amount to pinch of nothing. And let you out, and then they've got to put you on probation, make sure you don't go crazy or something. Start killing people, turn into a serial killer. So they do that. And then with all of that, the courts have said that as long as you're on probation, you're still under incarceration. As long as you're on probation, say the courts, you're still under incarceration. Why? Well, because you're imprisoned. What is imprisonment? Let's get down to the bottom line here. Imprisonment is to be confined. Imprisonment is to be confined to a boundary. To be confined to a boundary. Is probation being confined to a boundary? You better believe it is. You can't leave this county. You can't leave this federal court district. You can't leave the boundaries of this state. You can leave the boundaries of the state, but you can only venture 50 miles into the other state. There's another common one that's used. Or you can go down to Kentucky from Indiana, but you can't go anyplace else because we know you got a job in Kentucky. Well, that's being confined to boundaries, the boundaries of states. That's called incarceration. Did you know that? It is. Bail's the same way. I've always put a high value, this is a common law doctrine, high value on false imprisonment. Imprisonment is the most fundamental expression of taking a man's liberty, his right to locomotion. To locomote and go where he wants to go. And if someone takes that away from him by force or threat of force, that's called imprisonment. And if he does it without the law behind him to do it, that's called false imprisonment. False imprisonment is actionable. Somebody keeps you in a hospital too long, won't let you out. I had somebody try to do that to me once. Fortunately, I knew a girl who knew how to take all those tubes out of my body. And she did, and we left. But that if they were trying to keep me there, I didn't know that at the time. I could have sued them for false imprisonment. That would have been quite a circus. Yeah. Well, anyway, but getting out of jail is as a matter of practicality, then you don't have restrictions on you except what the law says you have. Now, if the law, well, whatever they say the law is, says you can't vote anymore in this state or that, or you can't own a pop pistol or a firearm or a knife or whatever they say, then it's you're at risk if you get caught with one, whether you think it's the law or not. Well, it's important that people know what they're dealing with as a matter of the lawlessness of government. Yeah, it irks me. It's a travesty that life sentences are given that way. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay, thank you, Brent. And that was a good answer, and I think that was the second part of the question, right?
They summarized some a perspective here. Second part, how does the government restrict anyone for acquiring a passport because of child support? So I don't quite understand that question. And then he goes on and says, many of these questions above are asked with an understanding of the Constitution, so I do not see them to have any authority at all. But based on most of the people in our country beliefs in the laws states made after the original Constitution was changed in the late 1800s has no validity to me. If I'm wrong, I am open-minded to any guidance. Ronald. So there you go. Any comment?
I would not tell him that he's wrong. I mean, he should know if he's here and he's listening to us that we don't agree with all those kind of statutes. You know, just like Brent said, they're taking authority where they have none. You know, and so this goes on. This is the condition of the world and of the world we live in, well, the United States, but also of the world. And, you know, we used to be a bastion of freedom, but that has been destroyed. And hopefully we can get it back. I don't know if we'll ever get it back all the way, but, you know, it's certainly, but we may. Things may reset and, you know, people, moral-minded people could take over. And they seem bent on self-destruction of themselves. You know, God leads the devil around like a bull with a ring in its nose. And oftentimes it's also the snake eating its tail. And you can see where they're destroying themselves because they just, you know, the devil's only interested in getting as many souls as he can. I don't think he always sees the end result. The end is that he's losing, and he knows that. So that's why that happens. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that. It's almost obvious. So, Brent, I don't know if you have a subject you want to go ahead and take off on, but if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, and I'll let you do that. And if anybody wants to get in the queue, I think it's a star and six. Get in. There's nobody in the queue right now that I see.
Okay. Thank you, Gerard.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your kindness. By the way, Gerard's on the Patriot Soapbox on Wednesdays, I believe, and the Gerard Wednesday morning.
Yep.
Yeah, Wednesday
morning. 1:00.
Okay, 11:00. He sits in his big armchair, just like he's in front room with you, and he talks about it. He does all sorts of things. Sometimes you can see his family walking through the room, and so he's not trying to put on any airs or anything. It is the talk that we have among one another that scares the evil empire and the useful idiots of it, doing the kind of things we're doing here. It may seem small to some people, but it's very important that we exchange ideas and encourage one another. Now, I wanted to, my comments are my own. I introduced myself. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And go to the website and join us for a grand jury class on Thursday mornings and learn what your duties are as a grand juror, which is not taught, of course, in law schools. Hadn't been for a long, long time. We're trying to teach the things there that I didn't get in law school. I learned through very hard, hard experience. So I'm going to teach them there. They're important, and some things I teach there, we've taught some courses that they do teach in law school, contracts and evidence and things like that. You can go there and see that. You can go back and listen to all those courses, and you'll even get a certificate. We've started doing it finally. Now, somebody complained that they couldn't read it. It was too little, but I think we got that ironed out. It was a matter of the computer shrinking it down or something. Well, I want to read something to you here from the New York Times. And this is from a fellow by the name of Putin. He's a Russian. Vladimir or something, his first name. He's very much in the news these days. This is written back in the year 2013. This is from Putin, the boss man in Russia, writing to the New York Times. Op-ed. He talks about his working and personal relationship with a fellow by the name of Obama. He said, I would rather disagree with the case he made on American Exceptional. But he says, I would rather disagree with the case he made on American Exceptionalism, stating that the United States policy is, quote, what makes America different. It is what makes us exceptional, said Barack Hussein Obama. It is extremely dangerous, said Putin, to encourage people to see themselves as exceptional. So he's taken exception, see, to this statement about exceptionalism of Americans. It is dangerous to encourage people to see themselves as exceptional. He continues, he says, whatever the motivation, there are big countries and small countries, rich countries and poor countries, those with long democratic traditions and those still finding their way. Of course, we've said here before that the whole idea of democracy is a misnomer, and the word shouldn't be used the way it is, but I want to ignore that. That's not what I'm getting at. He says there are big countries, little countries, rich countries, poor countries, those with democratic traditions, and those still finding their way to democracy. Their policies differ too. Now here's the statement I'm wanting to get at. So listen to me close. He said, we are all different. But when we ask for the Lord's blessings, we must not forget that God created us equal. We're all different, said Putin, but when we ask for the Lord's blessings, we must not forget that God created us equal. Now, Gerard, a while ago, played a recording of Alexander Scorby reading from the Gospel according to John, the Gospel of John. Now, if that doesn't warm your heart when you listen to that, if that doesn't give you a feeling of sublimity, there's something wrong with you. And you're part of the problem. Now, I don't know if Putin's a Christian man or a non-Christian man. Never will know for sure. He'll know. He knows. Certainly, the Lord himself knows. But whatever the case, this statement he makes right here is the statement of a Christian man. Whether or not he's faking, I don't know. I'm not concerned with that. That's not my business. My business is to decide whether or not he said the right thing. And he did say the right thing, and he encouraged the right speech and the right thought. And he disagreed with that fellow that used to sit in the White House, that pervert named Obama. Well, I like that. I like that a lot. You know, the way I see this, for what it's worth, this situation over there in that place called the Ukraine, I see, to try to boil it down, I see the Russian bear, I'm putting it in the terms of Winston Churchill, when he was at that meeting with Roosevelt and Stalin, he said, I felt like I was between a Russian bear and an American bison. They were big and woolly, and I was being crushed between them. Well, there's a Russian bear and an American bison, and then there's the Ukraine. And all the other players in this situation are presumptive sillies. Most of the people that are watching are presumptive sillies. There's a remnant of people that are watching that have a propensity to reality. The Ukrainians have shown themselves foolish. They have listened to the United States for a few decades. They have depended on the promises of the most powerful country ever to wield power among humanity. That powerful country led them down the primrose path. said, we want you to be a de facto member of NATO. We want you to join us and not the Ruskies. We will take care of you, said Clinton and Obama and Bush. Just go along with us. We'll help you, and when it comes time, we'll make sure the Ruskies don't bother you. That went on for a long time, and now the Ruskies said, we feel threatened because the Americans put in a government of perverts, a lot of perverts in government, and more today than most times, put in a government of perverts, and we don't like that kind of stuff, and we don't know what they're going to do. You folks are rattling your sabers, and Joe Biden said that, called us names, and he did. He called the Russians name. Isn't it funny? People complained. I was in a hotel one time out west, and I got up and went downstairs to see if they had any breakfast. This has been back when DJ first got into office. And there was a fellow there getting coffee, and I was trying to sample the coffee, and I was trying to strike up a conversation, and he was about my age, and I found out he was a medical doctor who just got back from Australia. I asked him how that works. He said, oh, it's an exchange kind of a thing. We go over there and practice, and they send some of their doctors over here. And I said, did this just start since the new administration? He said, no. He said, it probably won't last. He said, and then he got real ticked, and he started talking about Trump, and he started bad-mouthing him and telling me how stupid he was and how dangerous he was to the world and how bombastic and how he says things that is going to make people mad. Well, that never happened. He made Americans mad by what he said. He didn't make anybody else mad because he didn't do that kind of thing to other people around the world. Biden does. Biden calls, you talk about not understanding foreign policy. He calls people names. He makes it happen, makes them mad, makes them hate America. And disrespect us because he's a buffoon, a dishonorable buffoon. He doesn't even try to be honorable. Well, at any rate, so you got America. They led the Ukrainians down the Primrose Path, put in a government of perverts, all the while saying to themselves, like the left always does, well, we'll get some bloodshed going here. And we don't have to worry about it. We don't have to bleed. We'll let them do the bleeding. If it works out, fine. If it doesn't, we haven't lost anything. And Putin doesn't really care what the rest of the world thinks. He knows it's all a damnable lie, what they're saying about him. And so he's just going to do what he's going to do. People ask me, what's going to happen? Well, I'm not a prophet. I'm a predictor of probabilities. He's just going to keep plodding away until he crushes everything. That's what's going to happen. He tried to talk them into to helping him and not resist. And once a country like that, can you imagine us invading Europe, going into Normandy, marching across France, and then saying, well, we think we're going to go home now. That wasn't going to happen. You say it happened in Vietnam? No, that's not what happened in Vietnam. We never even tried to start with there. We just went over there under a buffoon president whose wife was a chief shareholder in Bell Helicopter. And they made a lot of money, and 50,000, 60,000 Americans were killed, young Americans, for no reason except to enrich him and his friends. That's the way it always works. Well, so the Ukrainians are in the process of being crushed. Do we see that as anything we didn't expect? No. Just to say this, I say publicly here, I hope Obama and Biden are listening, and Clinton and Hillary and all the rest of that vermin. I ain't no part of what you are, and I ain't no part of what you do. If I had the power to stop it, I would. I do have the ability to say it and to tell the Ukrainians, don't trust these people that are holding the levers of power in America. They're dangerous, evil, turncoat, disloyal, backbiters, haters of fathers and mothers, drug addicts, sex perverts, and it's pretty bad. And to say to the Ruskies, I hold no ill will toward you. I don't think I understand enough to say what you ought to do. You're not my country, and I can't make your judgments for you. I remember when, some of you will remember, I know this crowd isn't all a young crowd, you remember when Russia put nuke missiles in Cuba. We didn't like that either. And that threat didn't amount to nothing. Nothing. Compared to what NATO is doing and threatening Russia with. What's the matter with us? The people in the White House and all, what's the matter with them? Well, that wasn't what I would call an educational presentation. I like to do educational stuff a little bit, but I wanted to weigh in on the situation because I don't want those people over there on the other side of the world to think that we're all evil idiots. How did we get in this shape? Here we are. What are we going to do about it? Well, let's think about this. It may be a long haul if we're able to pull out. These folk are a murderous bunch. And it's our duty to do what we can and enjoy it because we're doing what God wants. What does God want us to do? Well, He's delegated to us the power and the authority. The authority and the power, I should say. Right comes before might. To stop this kind of buffoonery and evil, one case at a time. Our common law tradition has provided us with the grand jury and the jury. And it is the power of the grand jury and the jury and the grand juryman to say yes or to say no. Now I'm looking for my glasses. Of course, you don't have your glasses on, you can't find your glasses. I want to read something else to you if I can find it. This is a quote from Justice Joseph Story. This is in a case called Van Nest Packard, and of course it's been 170 years ago. U.S. Supreme Court said our ancestors brought with them the general principles of the common law and claimed it as their birthright. Well, if they brought with them the general principles of the common law, and all of this, all of us that are settled on this land are heirs to what it was they brought over here, and we are, every one of us, every one of us that lives here and claims this land, we are heirs to the common law. Is that special? You better believe it's special. Listen to what President Andrew Jackson said in his veto message of 10 July, the year 1832. Veto message, 10 July, 1832, regarding the renewal of the charter of the Bank of the United States. He called them vermin, by the way. He said this in vetoing that bill, or that renewal. He said, each public officer who takes an oath to support the Constitution swears that he will support it as he understands it, and not as it is understood by others. It is as much the duty of the House of Representatives, of the Senate, and of the President to decide upon the constitutionality of any bill or resolution which may be presented to them for passage or approval, as it is of the supreme judges when it may be brought before them for judicial decision. The opinion of the judges has no more authority over Congress than the opinion of the Congress has over the judges. And on that point, the president is independent of both, speaking of himself. He was the president when he wrote this. Then he says, the authority of the Supreme Court must not therefore be permitted to control the Congress or the executive when acting in their legislative capacities, but to have only such influence as the force of their reasoning may deserve. What's he saying? Let me boil it down. What he's saying is this. Every live man and woman in America By extension, this is the principle he's talking about. Everybody has the same duty to do what they know to be lawful, regardless of what the president says, regardless of what the Congress says, regardless of what the Supreme Court says. Now, somebody a while ago made the point, said, well, I know they changed the Constitution in 1870-something, and so this new Constitution doesn't amount to anything, and so I don't have to do any of that. Well, there is a doctrine. I want to bring this up, too. This is a common law doctrine. It's important to understand, and or to know about. Just know about it. And it's the doctrine that says that whoever's in power is in power. Whether they're rightly in power or not is another question. But if you don't think they're rightly in power, they're still in power. And until we get it straightened out, we obey those that are not rightly in power if what they say is lawful. Why is that doctrine important? Well, it rose, of course, in England. And there were times when people became holders of the crown that weren't authorized to do so. And the courts had to decide in such cases, does that mean that everything that happens and everything that the crown does and all the orders they give are unlawful, nobody has to do anything? And they said, no, that's not true. We have to live with this fiction till we get it straightened out. It's clear that Biden is not president of the United States. Well, if he's not president of the United States, he has no authority to deliver orders to the armed forces of the United States. But he does, and they obey him. When he told those two frigates to leave the Black Sea and come through the Dardanelles, they left. That wasn't too long ago. I'm making the point, our God is a God of order. I'm not saying you should obey government when the government tells you to do something that by your very obedience to government, you are disobeying God. But if government tells you to do something that you can do without disobeying God, like not run a stop sign or not speed or a lot of other things, go ahead and do it. Jesus Christ said when the Roman soldier tells you to carry his pack a mile, and the Roman law did allow that. A Roman soldier had a legionnaire had right under Roman law to tell anybody that he needed to help carry a load to carry a load. And Jesus Christ says when they tell you to do that, ask you to carry it a mile. Shucks, go ahead and help him out. Carry it too. Remember the man that carried the cross of Jesus Christ when Jesus Christ fell under the load, having been beaten half to death, and they put the timber on him and told him to take it to the place of execution. He fell down, and they grabbed a man out of the crowd, standing along watching, and made him carry it. That was the law of Rome, see? The same principle. But my point to you is, we are as people who are devoted to our land, we are to pick our battles carefully, not fight everybody all the time, try to fight the government at every point. It won't work. No, you pick the controlling issues and fight those. Decide what hill is worth dying on. What is it you're willing to put it all up for? Not having a driver's license? Not having tags on your car? Is that what it is? Well, I would suggest there might be more important things. But that's up to you. I'm not here to apply God's law to anybody. I'm just here to throw out ideas. And again, I'm thankful for the opportunity because I know the crowd here is, I'm not saying this to impress you. I just know that you're a more contemplative and patriotic crowd. So my comments are my own. May or may not agree with the points of view of Gerard, John, and some of the others that are involved here. But as always, they're kind enough to let me say a few words. I hope that John's all right, Gerard, is he?
Yeah, he'll be all right. He had his appendix out, and it was close to bursting, and so he's in a lot of pain. It didn't burst, but, you know.
Yeah.
And then he's got this Doberman that's still kind of a puppy. He's like, I don't know, 7-8 months old, and he got in the room and jumped on his stomach.
And
he relived the pain. He was ready. He felt like he wanted to go back in the hospital, but then it subsided.
Oh, man.
And he said, well, if I feel good, I'll be on tonight. And I said, no, you're not.
No, okay.
Like, you're not going to make it. Just forget about it.
Yeah, relax. That's an ordeal. Well, you probably said that at the beginning, and I got on a few minutes late, but thanks.
Yeah. So, anyway, it is what it is. I mean, you know, it's terrible that those things wait until this late in life to hit you, because everything's harder when you get over 60, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I do.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, they used to say, you don't need the appendix, you know, it's something God put in there that we don't need. Mm-hmm. And now they know that all these things, have a purpose. And I do believe, like the appendix, especially if you get it out when you're young, I don't know when you're older, if it's going to affect you as much as it does when you're young.
Uh-huh.
Because your immune system is trained by that point. But they find that people that have their appendices out, especially younger children and stuff,
mm-hmm.
that they catch, you know, many, many more colds and viruses than people that have them intact. So it has something to do with the function of the immune system that they don't even understand yet. Mm-hmm. You know, we think they know everything, and they don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I'm of the same opinion, yeah. I don't want anybody cutting my earlobe off. I think I'd miss it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's good for, but I do believe somehow that there's something important about the way my ear is made and my lobe and, you know, all that. God knows he did it.
For one thing, if you lost your earlobe, your head would probably cock to be unbalanced.
You know, I had a grandmother, quick story. Grandma, she's gone. My grandparents are gone now. But she was born with a tendon on one side of her neck that was shorter than the other one. So grandma always had her head turned to one side. And somebody asked, well, it didn't bother her. She was all healthy. Her whole life would be 102. But somebody asked her mother once, my great-grandmother said, well, why didn't you take her to the doctor and have that just snipped? And she said, well, if I did that, her head would just flop around. She couldn't control it. But I found out later, Grandma told me later, that apparently there are people born like that, and they have operations in a way. The surgeons have a way of fixing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it never bothered her. It's just one of those little things. It wasn't like it really was way over. It just a little bit different, you know. And yeah, I agree with you. There's something good about the way God made us. And to maim ourselves without cause is not good. And the appendix, I've read about that too, that way. I can't believe there's anything superfluous, extra that I don't need. Just like we are to read all writings of legal significance and make sure every word tells. There are no superfluous words. That's the rule of the interpretation of our Constitution, of statutes, and of contracts and wills and trust and the Bible itself. There are no superfluous words in writings of legal significance. And you can find them once in a while. The only reason you would say a word is superfluous, for instance, is if it causes the meaning to be absurd. That there is a possibility with documents men write, and the Constitution is a document that men have written. It has some things that I'm not quite square. Well, a few. There are a few things there that I think could have been said different or better, but that's not for me to judge at this point. It's written down. Well, back to you, Gerard.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, and where are we today? I mean, they can do a lot of great things, but they've gotten to the point where they want to completely rebuild us and make us into a transhuman with an AI. They want to do away with men. You know, now they're playing God. They think they could do it better. You know?
I have found for tonight, I was hoping there was a way. I'm not technically adept enough to do it. but someone, a friend, sent me a recording of one of these so-called scientists that work for a fella in Europe who's very famous. I don't care about him, don't remember his name. But yeah, he goes into great detail about the genetic alteration and the ability that the powers that be claim they can have to do that. And what they want to do, they have determined to do, is to change the genetic imprint of men. That's what they're after. That's what this is all about. That's where they are. They're lunatics wanting to play God.
Well, it's Luciferian because they want to redo the earth to their image and likeness, not to God's.
Yeah, that's right.
That's their goal, really.
Yeah.
And I mean,
yeah.
And I don't know if the devil really understands that his image and likeness, it's ugly. It's not pretty, you know.
No.
So I don't know. They're getting really, really crazy. I heard, I think it was Charles Schwab talking. These guys are talking and telling us, you know, look, it's over. You don't have free will. We can't allow you to make your own decisions, and we're going to fix it so that we take care of everything for you, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I couldn't believe that they were at a meeting discussing this stuff and telling and really laying out the plans they have for us. And that recording, as far as I'm concerned, is evidence, as far as I'm concerned, in a Nuremberg-type trial. The fact that they're putting this together and conspiring to do this stuff is prosecutable, as far as I'm concerned. It's a crime against humanity, and it's a conspiracy.
That's the fellow I was trying to think of his name, Schwab. Yeah, that's the one.
He's disgusting. Yeah. They all are. I mean, the things that he says, you know, he should have been removed. If anybody's got to remove their genes from the gene pool, it's him, you know, because he has that evil seed, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah. The reptilian.
The reptilian, exactly.
That I hear people talking about. They're so, I'm not saying they're reptiles, but they're so cold-blooded that I understand why people say it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's that bad.
You know, today there's the idea out there that one of the reasons God chose Noah is because there was all this kind of stuff going on back then that where they were playing with stuff, and they had defiled the human genome, and Noah's was pure, and that's one of the reasons he chose him. I mean, I don't know how true that is, but I do know, you know, that a lot of times when you're looking at legend and all this stuff, there's a thread of truth to that. You know, the Greek gods and all this stuff and the giants, and we're finding out now that, I mean, well, it's in the Bible. There were giants. There were the men of renown and all this stuff. I think, you know, when they showed a guy that's half horse and half man, they might have been experimenting with this stuff back then. You know, we think that they were stupid, that they were ancient cultures. They actually could have been more advanced than we are right now. That's what people don't understand. And that's why God destroyed the earth, because he had to bring us back to the way he made us. And, of course, that seed never got killed because, the Canaanite seed, I don't want to get into that tonight, but you know where I'm going with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you had these people that came from Cain, and that was that reptilian seed, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you say, why wouldn't God just destroy that? Well, because I think in my mind, and I'm by no means an expert or anything, but I'm looking at things with discernment and that, I think that because men have free will and God takes it seriously right to the nth degree, the fact that Eve fell and did what she did, she kind of brought that on us, and God was not going to stop that. I mean, he had to send his son to repay that. But I believe that he allowed that evil seed to go on as a result of our free will, the consequence that only God could, that only Christ could pay for us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it sounds so totally logical, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, from from my perspective, I can give you my studied opinion on it for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
There is woven through the pages of the Bible from front to back the theme of this what some people over the centuries have called demonic eruption. And you first see it in Genesis chapter 6, and the sons of God see the daughters of men.
Right.
And they found them to be wholesome good, and they took whomever they... And so the seed of man was corrupted by this, but it doesn't say how it happened, but it does say it happened. Peter refers to it in the Epistle of Peter, refers back to it, and then Jude, the next to last book of the Bible, Jude refers back to it as well. And this comes to America, too, because during the days of... when the Puritan migration began to New England between 1630 and 1640, and thousands upon thousands came. Am I still here? Hello?
Oh, yeah, you cut out for me. I don't know if you did for everybody else. We got terrible wind over here, but...
Okay. Well, during that time, there was a woman in the New England colony there by the name of Anne Hutchinson. Anne Hutchinson. And she started... She said that God spoke to her, and she'd have people come over to her house, and she would tell them what God had said. She was declaring that she was a prophetess. And the leaders there in the colony said, "Now, Anne, that's against the law for people to be claiming they're prophetesses, especially outside of any other authority, and we want you to stop." Well, she wouldn't stop. And so they banished her eventually, and then she came back and did it again, and they told her, "Don't do this. That's against the law here. We have the words of God, we have the Bible," and she was saying things that were very unusual, and leading people astray. That's what it boiled down to. Well, it didn't come out good. But according to John Winthrop, who was there, and testified to it, and his credibility as a witness is impeccable. And you can read his testimony about what was found. But when she was gone, they uncovered in the area behind her house the bodies of several babies that she had given birth to. And according to his testimony, they were... creatures that were half monster. The medicine calls them monsters, mm-hmm. because they were part humanoid, or part human and part animal, wings and beaks and claws and etc. Now, these things also occur in our own day. I did know a lady worked as a nurse in a hospital in southern Illinois, where the Ohio and the Mississippi come together, and she saw these things occur in the OB ward. Girls would come in. It was a pretty poverty-stricken place, but girls would come in and give birth, and women, and this would turn up. It's called monsterism. I don't know if that's the word they still use, but monsters is the medical term that's used for babies that are born. And most of the time, this nurse told me, when they're born, they're almost always born dead. She never saw one born alive. And this, some people say, is part of that demonic eruption. Now, I'm not trying to explain this. I'm saying these things are fact. And the testimony, if you take his testimony as true, John Winthrop, governor of the colony, that's what he said. And others were with him and testified to it. And it's seen yet today in certain circumstances. Old Scratch, that's the devil himself active? You bet he is. Of course, in the early days, what he wanted to do was corrupt the seed of man. This is in the Bible, corrupt the seed of man in such a way that the Messiah could not come. Because the Messiah, in Genesis 3:15, right after Grandma and Grandpa Adam and Eve did what they did, God proclaimed the gospel in the 15th chapter, in the 15th verse of the third chapter, the Protoevangelion, where he said that the seed, singular, of the woman will crush the head of the serpent. And that's the foretelling of the coming of the Messiah. And if in the devil, it is understood from the Bible, was seeking to corrupt the seed of Adam, so the Messiah, the perfect man, the God-man, could not come and redeem his people. And it says of Noah, you brought this to mind, Gerard, when you were talking, it says of Noah that of all of mankind, all of Adam's race, only Noah, and the Hebrew word there is tamim. He was the only one that was tamim. Well, that's the same Hebrew word that's used later in Leviticus to talk about sacrifices that are not blemished, not lame or blind or halt. In other words, not deformed in any way. And physically speaking, it's saying there that Noah, and so, but here's another good point I like to point out from Noah, Gerard. Noah didn't try to save the world. Grandpa Noah just tried to save his family. That's all he did. He just tried to put another plank in the ark every year for 120 years. Finally got the thing built, and it was in time, and he saved himself, Mrs. Noah, his three boys, and Shem, Ham, and Japheth, wasn't it? Yeah. And their wives. So it was a total of eight persons. And he did not try to save the human race, except to preach to them, which didn't do much good. But in saving his family, he saved the whole race of Adam. Karl Marx tried to save the world. He said so. He had five daughters, I think, maybe all of them, but I know most of them committed suicide. When I was growing up, there was a lady that lived north of us. I didn't know her before my time, but she wrote a song that we used to sing. And the song went this way. It said, do not wait until some deed of greatness you may do. Do not wait to spread your light afar to the many duties ever near you. Now be true. Brighten the corner where you are. And that's what God wants us to do right here, right now. And you'll have power beyond power, all of us, if we will but relax and emanate what our Savior has given us. And he says, there will flow from your belly rivers of living water. And that's how we'll replenish and be used. God will use us. Well, I'm getting pretty esoteric there, Gerard, but doggone it. It's time to get down. It's time to get down to the ground and get serious here. Go ahead.
Well, you look out there, and a lot of the stuff you can see, stuff that we didn't even understand not that long ago.
That's right. I mean, I get it.
And I look at, I'm saying stuff today that I couldn't say even a year ago.
For example, what?
Well, like calling out, you know, some of the obvious fraud between the COVID and this and that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It seems that, and even some of this biblical stuff, seems that there is a great awakening going on. Mm-hmm. You know, and even though if you're going to use the media to as your barometer for what's going on, you're way off. Way out in left field somewhere, because the media is what's killing us.
Yeah.
The media is running the narrative, and they'll have you believe in the opposite. I used to read a lot of science fiction when I was a kid, and there was this theme that ran through that, you know, if you believe something, and this might actually be true, that if you believe it enough, you can cause it to happen. Like if you believe that there's a bullet in this fake gun and you really, really believe it and I pull the trigger, you could maybe die from a heart attack because you talked yourself into it.
Oh, you talked yourself in. No, I get what you're saying.
You scared yourself to death, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And isn't that what a tool of the devil is fear? And if you look around, you see everything's fear, fear. Oh, the pandemic, the virus, the this, the that. And basically what they did is they sold us a bill of goods screaming the sky is falling when it wasn't.
I agree.
And they said, oh, well, you gotta take this vaccine. Well, guess what? The vaccine is and was the bioweapon. They just fooled us into taking it. Mm-hmm. And I've done a lot of research, and it's disgusting. You know, they did not want any autopsies done in the beginning. You know why, right?
I assume, well, no, I'm not sure exactly.
Because it would show that everybody had, I have this one video where they're pulling blood clots the length of people's legs and up through the thoracic. These are the corners that are trying to embalm the people. Mm-hmm. And they said they've never seen this. The artery down in the leg, the middle of the leg, that's one of the biggest arteries in the human body.
Uh-huh.
Full of a clot from bottom to top, 3 foot long, 4 foot long. And you see, if they would have allowed autopsies, it would have connected back up to the shot. That was the common thing that ran through it. So they this stuff they gave us, that's what it was designed to do. And it's insidious because it can take up to 4 years to do it. And so they're figuring that when it finally hits, that people aren't going to connect it to the vaccine. I mean, this whole Ukrainian thing, is like everything else they do, is designed to kill more birds with one stone. In other words, there's a lot of stuff that went on in the Ukraine all through the ages. There was a lot of evil stuff that went on in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, besides the fact that there was 15 bioweapons lab that we built, America built, and let's not forget, Uranium One, Hillary Clinton and Obama selling the uranium out of there, and then Biden and his sons, you know, and the pipeline and getting all this money and taking kickbacks and all this horrible treasonous stuff, and they needed to get in there to take control so that they could hide the evidence. So like, if we go in there in a war and we win, then none of that will get out. But other than that, and I think that's part of what Putin's doing is gathering this evidence, because I think he's working with the white hats, because he got sick of the CIA running everything and doing what they were doing. You know, when he became president, and I'm not saying Putin's any kind of a good guy, but, you know, through the Bible, there were lots of men that God used that did his will, and he blessed them for it. And they don't, I can't tell you that they didn't go to hell when they were done. But, you know what I mean?
I get it.
But,
yeah.
But they did God's will, and God blessed them. You know, Nebuchadnezzar was one, wasn't he?
We give too much credit to the people about the Jews or something. They were the evil people in the Bible in almost all cases, but there were those people that weren't directly identified with them that knew more than they did and understood more than they did. And God works among all people, and he's working among us right now. Mm-hmm. The only question is some people say that George Washington and Governor Morris and Madison and Jefferson and all that crew were deist. And that is wholly untrue. Because a deist, one of the great characteristics of a deist is he doesn't believe that God is involved in the affairs of men. He believes God wound it all up at the beginning like a clock. He turned it loose, and he's been hands-off ever since. That's certainly not what those fellows believed. Even the ones that had a lower view of the Bible, for example, such as Tom Jefferson, he was fully convinced that God is active in the affairs of men. And Washington, of course, was too, not to mention Madison. And so for us today to deny that is to deny the fundamental understanding of those that promulgated to us our organic law and preserved to us a culture that was already in place and tried to put documents in place that would preserve it to us. And here we are. And when we find ourselves in a crisis, so said some philosopher, men instinctively turn their eyes toward their origins and look there for a sign. And I certainly do encourage all of you to do that. Gerard, can I talk a little bit about the grand jury class? And if you've got something you want to cover instead, that's fine too, but...
No, I'll be honest, I came in here totally unprepared.
Okay.
Had one of those days, and then next thing I know, uh-huh. John had me on the phone, so I just figured we'd catch as catch can, so to speak, you know?
Okay.
So go
okay,
ahead.
Well,
have at
okay,
it.
Well, all right, well, we've, of course, gone through the sheriff at Common Law, and Sheriff Darleaf was kind enough to be the presenter with me in the class. What a opportunity it is to have a, now in his fifth term, I believe, sheriff, willing to go through these classes with me. He's a right-headed man, fundamentally, and he's constantly wanting to learn, and that's what I'm wanting to do, and that's what I want the people that come to these classes to do. And I want you to come to the classes. I ask myself, over the years, I've been asking since I was young, what can I do in the midst of this madness? And it's, of course, been an onslaught of madness for many decades. The evil empire seems to pick up more steam than lose steam. But I've asked myself that question. I've tried politics. I was deeply involved in running for office. And I have tried also, I've tried the organized church. And I'm not against the organization of God's people. That's not my point. I'm just saying I tried it, and I saw that they are fundamentally, most all of them, utterly anemic and have a false view of Christianity. That's not to be a surprise to us. There's always been a remnant that had the right view, and most of the visible church throughout the histories of Christianity has had a false view of who even God is. I've discovered that. Well, I tried that, and then I tried the courts. Went into that pretty deeply. As a matter of fact, I'm still involved in some ways in that. And I discovered that I'm having minimal effect. I was involved with other men in the courts who said, if you're going to change the system, you got to get in, and you got to be a part of it, and all that. And I finally decided, no, I don't want to change the system. I don't want to change the system. I want to replace it. Well, what does that mean then? Then what am I going to do? I want to replace the system? Well, God didn't change me. He replaced what I was with something that was wholly new and was fresh, a new creature, as Paul the Apostle puts it. And that is the fundamental change that God wants among men. He wants to throw away the trash and give us a whole new thing. We're not here to reform anything. It's beyond reformation. You just got to throw out the corpses. And so that's what I concluded finally. That's where I could have the best effect. Now, to be more fundamental about it, I was going to talk about the grand jury. I may get to it, but I want to start with the fundamentals here. I'm a fellow that likes to read history, and I've been reading history for decades, still reading it. And I discovered some personalities that intrigued me throughout the history of our own culture. Many of them, going way back into Europe, centuries sometimes, and then coming forward. But the one man that stands out in a way that no other man does lived in the 14th century, that's the 1300s, and his name was John Wycliffe. John Wycliffe. John Wycliffe was the first man to translate the Bible into English. He didn't have the manuscripts from the original tongue, so he took the Latin Vulgate, which he was very familiar with, and he translated the Bible. That was before the printing press. Well, why did he do that? Well, people say what a hero he was, etc., and they tried to kill him on a few occasions, didn't get the job done for doing translating the Bible. But what people don't say about John Wycliffe, they say he's a hero for translating the Bible, but they don't say that he was also a brother-in-law to Geoffrey Chaucer. Geoffrey Chaucer was the fellow that wrote Canterbury Tales. He was a barrister. He was a common lawyer. And Chaucer had to leave England to keep his head from getting lopped off his shoulders and for writing things like Canterbury Tales. And Wycliffe faced trial of death, but he had a wealthy man that protected him. But Wycliffe looked around and he saw that his country was going to hell in a handbasket. He was an Englishman. And what he wanted more than anything in the world, he was a professor at Oxford, but he didn't want England to go down the tubes. And he was a very learned man. He's still called today the flower of Oxford scholarship. And he said this. He said, we've got to do two things in England, and these two things will save my country if we can get them done. Well, that interested me a lot. I said, well, what are they? Well, number one was translate the Bible into English. As he said, so the boy behind the plow can read it. The boy that walks behind the plow can read it. That's number one. But he said, that's not enough. He said, number two, as a practical matter, we've got to get the common law has to supplant the teaching of the Roman civil and canon laws at Oxford, which was the only big school in the country at that time, Oxford. The Roman and civil canon laws must be not reformed, replaced with our common law. So he translated the Bible into English. Well, that turned the world upside down for certain. And that is the reason why, John Wycliffe is the reason why that many people in the world now have the Bible in their own tongues. That's the reason why Martin Luther was able to translate the Bible into German, because John Wycliffe was the one that plowed the ground new and showed the world that it can be done in the face of threats of death. Well, they both did it, and then many other people did the same thing. And it's been going on ever since. He got that job done, not only in his own country, but to get back, his idea was to get back to the source, back to the fountain. Let's cut the traditions off and say, wait a minute, we need to recheck our premises, and we can't do it till we get the Bible in English. And he did it. But then he said, what about the teaching of the common law at Oxford? He promoted that. Parliament asked that he come and address them. And right at that time, the Parliament was held for the first time in a couple of centuries, held in English at the influence of John Wycliffe. And John Wycliffe said, we've got to get our common law reestablished. That's what we have to do. Now, he himself was a Roman priest, a very learned Roman priest, but he quit the priesthood, and the Pope of Rome excommunicated him. But his idea was the Bible's important, and he felt like the church had abandoned it, and he wanted to see it reestablished in his own country. Well, I said to myself, okay, did that work? Yes, it did work. It was a two-pronged plan. The laws of nature, our Declaration of 76 says, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, the laws of nature, William Blackstone tells us, is our common law. The law unwritten, lex non scripta, and the laws of nature's God is the Bible, the law written, lex scripta. And that's what that phrase in the Declaration of 76 means. John Wycliffe understood that principle, that there are two volumes that our Maker has given to us, the one unwritten and the other written. And these are our fundamental law. These are the tests whereby we may know whether our actions are within His jurisdiction that He's given us. If they aren't, we're going to suffer horrible consequences. Well, this became the tradition in our English-speaking world, and even Parliament later in the 1600s, 300 years later, almost 300 years later, Parliament convened the men in England that knew the Bible and at Westminster and gave them a list of questions and asked them to answer the questions, because Parliament said, we do not want to legislate outside the boundaries of what God has said is proper. And so they were seeking advice, and they got it. That's the tradition of our common law. That's the way it works. Our common law is the nexus that allows the law written, the standards of the Bible, to walk about among men. It's the nexus that where the rubber meets the road. It becomes practical. We take it, our common law, our courts, our understanding, our observations, and we say, well, how does this work? and then we apply it to specific instances, and that becomes the expression of our common law. What I read to you a while ago here from Andy Jackson about each public officer who takes an oath to support the Constitution and swears to that he will support it as he understands it and not as it is understood by somebody else like the Supreme Court. That's just fundamental common sense. That's an observation of the executive branch of our government of the United States. The executive branch, the fellow that held the reins at that time of the executive branch was Andy Jackson. He made this observation. That's what our common law is. It's the observations of men, the observations of men tested upon the previous observations of men. That's why we compare court opinions to court opinions. The rest of the world doesn't do that. Well, that's what we're trying to do with this law school, this winter's inn. We're trying to present our common law, our observations from our common law country, and our experiences as we move along and try to instance by instance deal with what is just and right. And key to that in our common law tradition is that feature called the grand jury. The grand jury has the power to say yes or to say no. And the grand jury can say no to the most powerful government to ever have operated among men, the United States government. It is incumbent upon us, it is our duty as Americans to know what that power is and how we are to wield it. And that's what this class is about. We're kicking it around. I'm struggling tonight, as I do once a week now, trying to put together the slides we're going to present, try to make it coherent. Answering questions about the grand jury, I talk, I say what I've found in the books, etc. And then I stop and I say, Sheriff Darr, you got anything you want to add? And I'm amazed in many cases at the comments that he makes, because he's just a guy like the rest of us, and he hasn't been to law school, but he's been sheriff for a long time. He's tried a lot of things. He's had a tough learning curve, he told me, when he became sheriff as a young man. But he said, I learned. And the observations, as he contemplates these things we're talking about, are fresh to me many times. And they'll be fresh to you, too. That's the value of people talking like we're talking now. Your brains, I hope, the wheels are turning, and what I'm saying, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, it's stimulating your brain to some degree somehow about these fundamental things. And that's why we get together. Well, I want you to come and sign up for the class. Go to commonlawyer.com and sign up. And your participation, your being there, keeps us going. And it also gives us more ideas. As I'd said before, I went through law school and I didn't hear anything said about the grand jury. No courses were taught concerning it or the trial jury. Just as there were no courses taught nor never mentioned the Second Amendment and the militia of the several states. There should have been. These are fundamental to us. Why wasn't anything said about them? Because they've concluded there's no money in it. That's why. And the large law firms donate to the law schools, and the large law firms then largely dictate the curriculum. They say, well, here's what we want. When you graduated these students here, we want them to be able to come here and do this, that, and the t'other. So train them. We'll give you more money. Well, that's the way that works. So some things get stressed more than others, and some are forgotten entirely. And we don't have to be all that practical. I hear somebody rustling around, makes me think maybe Gerard wants to say something. Is that you, Gerard?
Yeah, I was playing with my mic, but yeah, I do want to say something. Okay. You know, it's funny, those things that you mentioned that they don't talk about are the things that are the biggest threat to this new world order. You think that maybe there wasn't a little conspiracy theory behind all that? Well, they're death afraid of the grand jury. They're death afraid of these common law things. They're death afraid of the Second Amendment. Think about it. You know, the militia, forget about it. They started with McVeigh and that phony bombing of the federal building. That was all CIA done and Mossad. I'm sorry. And I've researched this stuff. So, you know, there's evil forces afoot. And they've been at it a long time. They're very patient. And we're seeing it all come to a head now. But that's just my theory. You know what I mean? But I
Gerard, I think it's more than a theory. And, you know, as you said, you researched it. You're not theorizing so much as you're telling what you discovered a fact is the way I take what you're saying. Certainly, were you done? I don't want to launch off again. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, that's good.
Okay. No, what Gerard just said was in response to what I'd say, and it stimulated a couple ideas in his head. Well, then he said that, and I'd never thought of it just the way he just said it. Whoa, that's exactly what the evil empire doesn't want. Isn't that something? Well, that's an important observation, and that is, I think, unquestionably true. That's why the grand jury isn't taught. But maybe, of course, they don't say, well, we didn't want to. It's just that this law firm and these other law firms are donating money. Well, that's the devil himself orchestrating evil. There are a lot of useful idiots out there. The devil does orchestrate things, you know. He can't control us from within. Like God. God says, I inhabit your body. And your body becomes the temple of my spirit. I get inside of you. Well, that's not the way the devil can operate. Now, there is such a thing as demon possession. I get that. The Bible's clear on that point. But that seems to be not the main way that the devil himself controls men. The Bible says the devil himself controls men through the lust of the flesh, three ways, just three. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the vainglory of life. Vainglory of life. That's the three things that appealed to our grandma, Eve, in the garden. Three things. She saw the fruit. Well, it looked pretty. It says so. Oh, it pleasing to the eye. That's what it says. Well, there's the lust of the eyes. She liked pretty things. Well, of course, girls do like pretty things, and guys like pretty girls, so I guess we all like pretty things. And she liked that pretty fruit, and that's the lust of the eyes. You know, you've heard people say, your eyes have an appetite. I've even heard people say, feast your eyes on this. Well, yeah, there's the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh. She said it'll be good for food. Well, is there anything wrong with that? No, but that is the lust of the flesh. And then she said, and the devil told her, the snake told her, the serpent told her, the old dragon, he said, the reptile, he said, and not only that, he said, it looks good, it tastes good, and it'll make you wise. There's the vainglory of life, you see. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and vainglory of life, and that's what old Scratch uses to control most people outside of possession from the inside. He controls us from the outside, and that's a weak way to control. It's not the control that God, the Spirit of God has when he takes up abode inside of your body. That's power. I don't think that it isn't much more powerful. What does the Bible say? I had a guy say to me tonight, oh, who was it? I talked to people on the phone. Oh, the guy, and we're having it's a legal case, and he's helping me. And he was going to have an interview. They want him to testify in a federal case, and we were talking about what he should do and how careful he should be. And he said, hey, bud, he said, I'm not worried. I said, what do you mean you're not worried? He said, I got a 4x4. A 4x4? Yeah, a spiritual 4x4. I said, what is it? He said, 1 John 4:4. Well, what does it say? Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Greater is he that is in you than he that is outside of you, the devil himself. I said, okay. I said, that's a good way to remember that, 1 John 4:4. So he went to the interview, and it wasn't a problem. And the lawyer didn't hurt him. Found out some things he wanted to know. But we have that going for us. And we needn't be anything less than bold and intelligent in our action and our speech, given what God has given us and what he has decided to do with us. He's decided to take up abode inside of our bodies. Well, the devil has to use the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the very vainglory of life objectively from the outside, you see. That's different. Is there power in it? Oh, yeah, there's power in it. It's drawn people in, but it's not like the power that you got if you're born from above, as the Savior says. So be encouraged. That's all I'm saying to you. Do not be discouraged. And to know the power you have as a grand juror, where'd that come from? Well, we can find that in the Bible. The jury we find in the Bible. It was something that the people of God recognized. You can see it most pronouncedly spoken about, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 6. There were five levels. There were five levels of courts in ancient Israel. Five levels. And at the lower court, at the little village, every little village had a trial court. And at the trial court, they had a bench. They called it a bench. That was their jury. They used the word bench. And they called it, watch this, the bench. And by the time the Greek tongue came around, they called it the bench of idiots. The bench of idiots. Then they had four levels above that, ending at what they called the Sanhedrin, which was 71 members. And that comes from the Old Testament, the 70 elders plus one. But at the bottom was this bench of idiots. Why do they call it bench of idiots? Now watch me close on this. This is fascinating in the extreme. The Greek tongue became the international tongue of the Roman Empire, and during the first century, the days of Jesus Christ sojourn down here, the Greek tongue prevailed all over the Roman Empire, and so they called it the bench of idiots because the word idiot is a Greek word. It's in the New Testament, by the way, quite a few times in the Greek New Testament, the original tongue New Testament. And idiot, when you see it in the Greek New Testament, you look at the English translations, it's most often translated, or often translated, O-W-N. O-W-N. Jesus Christ, it says, for instance, went to his own place. That's the word idios. Here's a good one. It says, wives, obey your own husbands. That's what it says. No, it doesn't say that. No. It says, wives, arrange yourself under your own husbands. I got to get this right. Obedience is a different matter. Arrangement and authority is what he's talking about there. Arrange yourselves under. But the word translated own husband, he's being very careful there. He says, arrange yourself under your husband, not somebody else's husband, you see. That's important. And you start thinking that one through, and it gets real condemning real quick. But the word own is the word idios. Idios. So some people say that it says, wives, arrange yourself under your idiot husband. That's really what it says. But the word idios means peculiar to you, own, your own husband, peculiar to you. And the bench of idiots, they called it the bench of idiots because every member of that jury, that they called it a bench, they were the judges of the law and the facts, every member was required to bring with him the authority, his own authority that God had bestowed upon him individually, and deliver his own verdict and not be persuaded, or not be controlled by some other member. That's why it was called the bench of idiots. It's stressed, as Andy Jackson says here, when I swear my duty, I swear to do it as I understand it, not as somebody else understands. I swear to do it as my own conscience tells me to do it. Idios in the Greek. My own conscience. My peculiar conscience. Well, it's called the bench of idiots. And then there were four appeals above that in larger courts. Very much due process oriented. So when you're a grand juror, you must, it doesn't work unless you do this, you do what you think is right. You don't fall under the control of if you're on the grand jury, you don't fall under the control of the United States attorney. That's what often happens. Just trust them to tell you what to do. No, no, no. They're not responsible, and you'll answer to God for what you do or don't do on a grand jury. Don't think you'll be able to say, well, the prosecutor, the United States attorney told me it's okay, I should do this. And God's going to say, well, but I gave you discernment. I gave you your own idios authority. What did you think? Why didn't you use what I gave you? I gave you authority. First John, or Gospel of John, they read from it. Alexander read from it at the beginning of our time here. He said in chapter 1, and John says, to as many as received him, to them gave he authority. And John Wycliffe said this too. He said, every man is to worship his maker under the open vault of heaven. No church, no hierarchy, no priesthood, no professor, no Supreme Court, no government comes between you and your God. There is but one mediator between God and man, says the book of Hebrews, and that is the man, Christ Jesus, who is, by the way, God as well. So he is our daysman, our go-between. But he has been given all authority, says the old book, and he has dispensed that authority to you individually with no intervening institution or person, right on your head. And when you go to be a grand juror, you carry the authority, and in the authority of Jesus Christ, if you're a Christian man or woman, you carry that. And when you go to be a grand juror, God demands, requires, on pain of penalty, that you use the authority he gave you. Listen, if God gives authority through his Son, through the God-man, Jesus Christ, that's what the Bible says. He gives authority to you, and you just shelve it in your brain and substitute somebody else's idea about what ought to be done, you're going to answer for it. That's not the way God works. God says the jury is the way I'm working here in this situation. You be your own man. I remember when my granddad used to come to the house every day, twice a day sometimes, in his pickup truck, and he'd stop. He'd come in the house. I found out later Mom and Dad didn't like that because he would never knock. I didn't care. I liked it, you know. I'm glad it worked out that way. Well, he'd come in, and then he'd want to know if we want to go over to the hard way and feed the cattle because it was on the other side of Needmore. In the wintertime, we'd go over there and chop the ice in the creek. That's where we kept our cattle. And he'd come over, and when I left home and I went to boot camp, and we were riding back in the pickup truck, and my brother and I'd fight over who got to ride by the window, because whoever rode there had to get out and open the gates, see, as we went through the gates, and nobody wanted to do that. So I got to sit at that time between Dave and my granddad. So I was sitting with my legs astraddle the gear shift. And we were about back to the house, and my granddad slapped me on the leg and gave me a hog bite on the leg, and he said, whatever you do. I was getting ready to leave, see. He said, whatever you do, you be your own man. Well, I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. I was too young to understand, I suppose. But as I've gotten older and older and older, that statement has made a big difference to me, because it gave me an idea of something I was supposed to do, and I need to find out what it is, and I need to get better at it as I go along. And I'm saying it to you now. Remember, I don't care how old you are, if you can still make moisture on a mirror or a glass when you breathe, you're in the now generation. That means God wants to use you. And that means he wants to use you with the authority he gave you individually. And that means, like Granddad said, be your own man. That's all. Just be your own man. be your own woman, too, of course. But God gave you authority for a certain jurisdiction, and when you're put in it, don't be substituting somebody else's mind for your own. That's the definition of slavery. Well, that's what we're talking about, the kind of things we're talking about in the grand jury course. And I want you to participate. Now, we're getting out of 12 sessions once a week. We're on session 6 coming up. And the ones that you didn't participate in are all recorded. And if you sign up, you can go back and listen to those. So you don't need not get it. And with it all, we started issuing the certificates. We're still working on it. It's slow going. It's a matter of finding enough help. One of my boys decided he would help do that, and I'm glad he did. But I have others that help too. But that kind of helped us get that part done. But we want to do more. But in the end, I want to grant a certificate and give people something to shoot for. A certificate of having graduated from the Winter's Inn and having gone through the course of study. You know, to go through law school, when Justice Holmes, for instance, went through law school, Oliver Wendell Holmes, when he went through, he went to Harvard Law School. And in those days, if you went to law school, you just went and listened to lectures. That's all. Just listen. No tests. You could come and go as you please. If you wanted to go through half the course or half the courses and then leave, you could do that. Whatever you wanted to do. If you want to go work for a lawyer and take the bar exam any time during that process, you could do it. You didn't. Well, we had lawyers then were just as smart as lawyers now with all this requirements and graduation and all that kind of. Well, I don't want to do that. I want to stress the things that should have been stressed when I was in law school. And I want people to just be able to relax and listen and go through the presentations. I want you to do that. And if you do that, then you're entitled to a certificate. We're working out the bugs on how to do that. And if you get a certificate from all the courses, a certificate of completion from all the courses, then there needs to be a graduation from the law school. We haven't got there yet. I've taught a lot of courses over the last few years, and we're now taking those and trying to get them online and make them available so people can access those too. Course on contracts. That was 40-some weeks long. We divided it up. I said, that's too long. We're down to 12 weeks now. That way you feel like you can get to the end. But we're doing that. Go to commonlawyer.com and sign up, please. I want you to take advantage of whatever I've got to unload. You can take advantage of it if you want to. And I'd be anxious to hear, like when I listen to Gerard, what your input is. Gerard, back to you. Maybe you've got something you want to add.
Well, my electric has been flipping on and off here the whole time. I thought I was not going to make it to the end of the meeting.
Oh.
We got some high winds around here tonight, really bad. Fire whistle going off every 5 minutes. Got a house fire. With, they said everybody's out, and then they said, but the mother's still in the home, so I don't know what's going on with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a local fireman, too, so if I can't go, it's like grates at me. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's been a wild and crazy night here. You know, we had a very warm day today after a very cold week. And it seems like that warm and cold are fighting with each other right now. But we got practically hurricane force winds here that are going to lift the tile and the roof up. Anyway, I don't have. Look, you said a lot of stuff, and it was good. And I thought of a couple comments in between, but I've lost them now. So
okay. Well, we've got about 6 minutes left, and maybe were there people that were in the queue at all that wanted to say?
I did not see one person in the queue, so I guess nobody really has anything that they want. Say that again.
You're in lecture mode.
Oh,
is that why there's no people?
That's why.
That's one way to keep it quiet, huh?
Yes.
Well, if you're interested and do join the grand jury class, we will also talk about the Pettit jury. It's impossible to mention
one. Yes, sir. How come it doesn't come on?
Are you there, Gerard?
Hello? Did I lose you guys?
Oh, no, wait. No, I'm here. I'm here.
I figured I've got 5 minutes left or whatever. I'd let somebody come in and say something.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah. You got to change the lecture mode. Click on lecture.
No, I did. It doesn't do anything.
There it goes.
Did you do that or did I do that?
You must have, or Francine. I didn't do it.
No, I tried it 3 times and it didn't do anything.
I didn't do it. It must have taken a long while to do it.
Yeah, well, I think my computer's suffering.
Well, you're not going to make it through all those folks in the in the queue.
No,
because you got 4 minutes, so.
Ready, set, go. But, yeah, you're right, and I don't want to get in between something, so I'm going to tell you, we'll take your name down, and next week we'll take you first, get in there first. That's Lubbock, Texas, and Michael from MI, and Damien. So, I'm sorry we didn't get you, but it's been one of those nights. And I'm going to just go ahead and close. We got less than 2 minutes left here. Clock is ticking. Thank you, everybody. Come back next week, same time, and hopefully John will be better and good enough to be able to put some time in. So thanks for everything, and God bless, and keep your powder dry.
Night, Gerard. We'll talk to you.
Yeah, good night.
Okay, night.